Impact of Influence, the tragic story of a powerful South Carolina family and the mysterious deaths that they are linked to. Hello, friend. Welcome to another episode. So grateful that you are joining us. There's been a lot of talk about the Alex Murdoch insurance lawsuit that was filed. And see, we've been getting that episode ready to go and talking to workman's comp people, but we will have that one come up a little bit later. Today, we want to talk about the Satterfield 911 call.
Right. We re-listened to it and we thought it would be, we had such great feedback when we had our 911 dispatcher on previously that we thought it would be a great time to do that again with this call.
So we'll break that down with our guest and Murdoch Podcast on Facebook and murdochpodcast.com. Again, we will have the episode soon about all that's going on with the legalese and the lawsuit against Alec, but let's take a dive into the 911 call. And I should point out, if it sounds a little different, that's because we had to do it via Zoom. So enjoy.
Before we bring in our guests to analyze the call, let's listen to it. The 911 call after Gloria Satterfield fell at the Moselle property.
9:24 a.m. 38 seconds, February 2, 2018.
Come here. 911 is your emergency. 4147 Moselle Road. Hey, can you give me the address? I'm going to make sure I got it right. Yes, 4147 Moselle Road. Okay, what's going on out there? I'm sorry? What's going on out there? My housekeeper has fallen and her head is bleeding. I cannot get her up. Okay, you said she's fallen. She's bleeding from the head? Yes. Okay. How old is she? I'm not sure, like 58 maybe. Do you know if she fell from standing or not? No. No. Where'd she fall from? She fell going up the steps, up the brick steps. Okay, so she out bed or inside? Outside. Okay. How many steps is there? Eight. Okay, is she on the ground or is she up near the top?
She's on the ground.
Is she conscious?
No, not really.
Is she awake at all?
Yes.
Okay. Is she just not, like, responding appropriately, but she is awake?
Man, she's not responding.
Okay, I've already got them on the way. Me asking questions does not slow them down, man. Knowing if she's conscious is one of the things that the medic needs to know, if she's responding
not
at
really.
All to you.
No.
Okay, so she's not responsive at all?
Well, I mean, she's mumbling.
Okay, so she is somewhat conscious. Is she breathing okay?
Yes.
Is she bleeding from anywhere?
Yes, her head.
Hey, are you guys able to control the bleeding?
No.
Can you put a clean rag or anything on it?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, is she bleeding from, like, her face, the back of the head?
I've got an ambulance coming. Sir, my name what?
Where exactly is she bleeding from on her head?
I'm not sure, the top of her head.
Okay.
What's it okay?
What happened?
She just fell back down. Can I get off this phone so I can go down there?
Can I have your name and phone number? Are you able to bring the phone down by her?
What?
Are you on a cell phone where you can walk down there
I'm
and talk?
I'm on a cell phone, no.
Okay, can you bring it with you so we can ask her some questions about what kind of pain she's having?
Hello?
Yeah, can you ask the patient what kind of pain she's having?
Ma'am, she can't talk.
Okay, do you know...
She's cracked her head and there's blood on the concrete and she bleeds out of her left ear.
Okay, she's bleeding out of her ear?
And out of her head. She's cracked her skull.
Okay. All right, the other lady said that she had tried to stand up and fell down again?
No, I was holding her up.
Okay.
she told me to turn her loose and she was trying to use her arm, but then she fell back over.
Okay, do you guys know who she is?
Yeah, she works for us.
Okay, do you know if she's ever had a stroke or anything before?
Ma'am, can you stop asking her to stop?
I already have them on the way. Me asking questions does not slow them down in any way. These are relevant questions that I have to ask for the ambulance. One of my questions is, has she ever had a stroke?
I don't believe she's ever had a stroke, not that I know
of. Okay. Okay, is she able to talk to you guys at all, or is she unconscious now?
She's not unconscious. She's just mumbling.
Okay.
I believe she's maybe hit her head and maybe has a concussion or something.
Okay.
Maybe.
Do you know what her name is?
Gloria Satterfield.
You said Sanderfield?
Ma'am?
You said Sanderfield?
Satterfield.
Satterfield. Okay, what's the house look like out there?
It's offset off the road.
Okay.
It's a big house, got a long driveway.
With a long driveway?
Yeah.
Is there a gate or anything down there that they're going to need to come through?
There's two big brick columns that have to come through.
Okay, but there's no, like, gate code or anything that they need?
No, ma'am. And tell them that they can look for a fellow on a 6x6 Ranger.
Okay.
Waiting on them in the road is green. You know what they probably know what the Ranger looks like.
Yeah. You said, like,
fellas
green.
Got on a black sweater, a hat, and pants.
Okay. All right. If something changes with her, if she loses consciousness or anything like that, I need one of you guys to call me back right away, okay?
Okay, well, how long is it going to take? Does this take us?
That I don't know. I've had them on the way since Maggie first called me. They were toned right away.
Okay.
All right, but I think they're coming. Hang on 1 minute, let me check. They're coming from somewhere on Belt Highway in Ruffin, okay? That's where their station is.
Thank you.
All right, but like I said, if something changes, call me back.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Seton, let's have you introduce our guest today.
So we're pleased to have Anna, who is a communications officer. She has 15 years experience working mostly in suburban and rural areas in Virginia. We know Moselle is a very rural area. What is different about dispatching in a rural area versus a suburban or urban area?
First of all, dispatching all over the country is different everywhere. It's not a national center that you dial. Even though a lot of people think that, you would be surprised how many people call and are surprised. But in a rural area, it really depends on the jurisdiction. Now, here in Virginia, most of what we call public safety answering points, which is where your 911 call goes, are handled by a local jurisdiction. So a sheriff's office, a police department, or a fire rescue emergency service. It just depends. In a city, you may have police, fire, and EMS all handled separately. Like the 911 call may go into one centralized center and then they shunt it out to whoever gets the call. Generally, in a rural setting, you're doing everything. So you are in a room with people who are dispatching law enforcement officers, fire, and rescue at the same time. You're answering all the phone calls, you're taking admin calls for the sheriff's office. Or your local PD, whatever it is at the same time. So that's one big difference. I think the hardest part about dispatching in a more rural area, though, is the time you spend on the phone with EMS calls and sometimes law enforcement calls, because the resources are limited. Whereas in a city, generally, there are more resources and they're more consolidated. So we actually butt up to an urban area. It's a small city, but it's very urban. Their general response time is 2 to 5 minutes. Their transport time to the hospital is 5 minutes. Our response time is more like 15 minutes. If you live on the outer edges of the county, it could be 45. So you could be on the phone with somebody. I've been on the phone with somebody for an hour before, just trying to, doing CPR sometimes, you never know. So that's the hardest part. And the biggest difference about dispatching in a rural area is that mostly you're doing everything. You're a jack of all trades, and you're also a lot of times on the phone for long periods of time with people.
When the caller, in this case, Maggie, says that that Gloria fell down the stairs, I think she said, or she says up the stairs, I think, is your protocol, at least where you are, to say, did you see the fall or did anyone see the fall or anything like that?
Yes. So this varies by location, but from the question she was asking, and then I actually looked up a little bit about their sheriff's office. And in one of the pictures, I did see what we call a card set from a company that's called Priority Dispatch that makes protocols. And actually, there's a whole academy, there's a whole site that does just protocols for emergency medical dispatch, fire dispatch, and police dispatch. Then there are other companies that make these card sets, or they also make software programs. Depending on where you work, maybe what you're using, not everybody in the country uses it, but I did see that in one of their pictures as something that they use. And I could tell by her questioning that they do.
So she's going down this list that's on the card.
Yes. Okay. So you start with what they call case entry. Your case entry is 6 questions. There are some qualifiers in there, depending on how they answer those questions. It's basically designed to determine the location and whether this person is having what they call a priority symptom. And the priority symptoms are chest pain, difficulty breathing, any altered level of consciousness, and then serious hemorrhage. Obviously, she did have a priority symptom. Then once you answer those 6 questions, you decide where to go from there. So this would have been a fall. Fall is its own protocol. Then you go to the fall card if you're using a card set, or if you're on the computer, it'll actually, you type in fall and then hit enter and it'll pop up with the questions you're supposed to ask. I believe the first question is, do you know what caused the fall?
Oh, so, okay. That's interesting.
So that kind of kills 2 birds with 1 stone. Like, did you see it? And do you know, because they could have passed out and then fell, or did they trip and fall? When you know there's multiple people there, if she were to say, oh, I don't know. Well, do you know if somebody saw her fall? Can you ask them? The other thing that is in there that I didn't ever hear her ask was, are you with the patient? And that means, are you right by them now? If they say no, well, can you go to the patient? That question should have been asked on case entry. That's a case entry question. It was way into the call before she got there.
Do you ever say, can I talk to the patient or whatever? Because they say she's mumbling. It seems a bit confusing whether she's unconscious or not because of the way that they answer the questions. Did you find that too?
Yes, that is often the case. And you do have to do a little bit of research, a little bit of further questioning. The idea for the emergency medical dispatch protocol is that anybody can do it. A lay person can run through these questions and then the EMS can get a response protocol based off of that information. In truth, if the more experience you have with it, the better, especially when you're using the card sets, because it's a giant card. It's like 18 inches long and probably as wide as your laptop, maybe a little narrower.
So it's kind of like a flow chart, probably. Yes. And you have this, you go over to this side. If you have a unconscious, you go steps, da 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 da.
Right. And you flip. So, and then for instance, if you go to fall and then you determine that she is unconscious, it will generally shunt you to an unconscious card at the bottom. Now, what do I do? When you're using the cards, it's more difficult to be compliant. I will say that with the software, it's a little bit easier because it pops up right in front of you.
I do kind of want to circle back to the fall. Like, we've had a lot of questions about the falling up the stairs, and we don't really, and we know that the dispatcher says, do you know if she fell from standing? But to me, it wasn't entirely clear if she answered that. She says, no, but I don't know if that meant that she fell, she didn't know if she fell from standing or if she didn't know.
Right. And I believe the actual question is, was this a ground level fall? And that's important because if it was a fall greater than different heights, like 10 feet is one qualifier, 30 feet is another, that's considered a long fall. So that will change the EMS response. So did she fall from ground level? That's what that's about. It does allow you to say, you know, did she fall from standing? Was she sitting? But yeah, that wasn't clear. She did say fell up the steps, which that does happen. You'd be surprised. But most people, when they fall up the steps or even down, you're going to mitigate your fall somehow.
Your hands are going to come out.
Arm down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you might break your wrist or something. Yeah.
Right. You see way more broken arms than broken heads from falls. Now, if you passed out and fell and didn't have...
Couldn't get your hands out.
That's a different thing.
I want to ask also about the bleeding. Like,
yeah.
Because they said there's bleeding. They talk about bleeding in the head. And I would imagine your job is trying to figure out where the blood is coming from. Now, sometimes I would imagine when the head bleeds, it can be all over the head and the caller might not know. Let's say it's running all over their head or whatever, right? They don't know the spot. But do you try to talk them through that to find out where? And is that important?
So to me, what would be most important was, is it coming from an external wound? Paul said she was bleeding out of her ear. Is she really bleeding out of her ear? Now, head wounds bleed a lot. So it may be that it's just trickling down and it looks like it's coming out of her ear. But if it's coming out of her ear, that's a little bit more significant problem than
sure.
She just has a head laceration. I mean, I would have said definitely, you know, where is she bleeding from? One of the questions is it spurting or pouring out?
Mm.
And then there are instructions on these cards. You also have what they call post-dispatch instructions. Once you've sent the call, or if you dispatch it yourself, depending on where you're working, you would then say, okay, now can you get a clean, dry cloth and apply direct pressure?
Because it didn't look like she received any sort of advice.
No.
Dispatcher didn't have any advice on how to help aid Gloria.
Right. And that's one of the things. I mean, it's very easy for people to get a little bristly when you're asking them all these questions and they really think they're having an emergency and they want help and they want it now. And it's super important to be in control of that call and explain to them what you're doing and why you're doing it. Hey, I need you. We need to help her before the ambulance gets there. Because again, in a rural area, that response time may be, who knows?
I mean, we're already 6.5 minutes in at this point. Right. We don't hear anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And most, the standard for dispatching is 2 minutes from the time of call.
I want to get your take on the fact that Maggie and Paul mentioned Gloria Satterfield was mumbling.
I think if you're mumbling, if you can't answer a direct question, that to me is a loss of consciousness, right? So then I want to check when you go to the unconscious protocol, now it's going to ask you to verify that she is breathing. She did ask, was she breathing? Was she breathing normally? But if she's unconscious, a person who's not trained won't necessarily know whether she's breathing normally, effectively. What they call in the protocol is effective breathing.
So and a brain bleed can cause breathing issues, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it could be normal for them to let her get off the phone. Would you try in your situation, would you try to keep them on the telephone?
Yes, absolutely. Now, again, if you're in a center and there's only a few of you and the phone's ringing off the hook. Now, I didn't hear any phone ringing in the background, but it depends, again, on how their center's set up. There is in the protocol what they call an urgent disconnect, which you would give them your last dispatch instructions and then say what she said. If she gets worse in any way, call us back. If you have an unconscious person in a kind of weird circumstance, I'm not going to get off the phone unless I have to.
Because you said if anything changes even if there's the possibility of something might change, I'm going to hang in there, I think, right?
Exactly. Does she have three other 911 lines ringing? True. I don't know.
Yeah, this is not meant to, you know, play Monday morning quarterback or say she did things wrong. We're just analyzing what, you know, it's easy after the fact, a little easier after the fact. So
we don't mean any like slamming to this 911 operator because we don't know, but we're just thinking of things that possibly could have happened. Right. Is there anything that jumped out to you as from the caller's perspective, any demeanor or anything that they said that struck you as odd? And we know that everybody reacts differently in emergency situations. So, but just of your years of experience, is there anything that stood out?
Well, it seemed odd to me that it seemed like nobody really knew what happened. So, you know, Maggie said she fell up the steps and she couldn't get her up. So that makes me think like she was there with her and she was trying to get her up, or maybe she went out the door and saw her fallen and then tried to get her up. And then did Paul come along and then he picked her up? And then, cause they said at one point that she fell, he was holding her up and she fell. Or did she say, oh, I'm like feeling a little woozy, and he was holding her up and then she was like, oh, I'm okay. And he let go of her and she fell down. I don't know. Like that wasn't really. That interrogation I didn't think was great. One of the things that usually when you're in a center like that, where it's consolidated, the nice thing is you can add law enforcement whenever you're wondering what's happening.
Oh, really? That's really interesting. I had no idea.
If the way that it looks to me, their center is set up where they're all in the same room with the computer-aided dispatching software, you should just be able to put in another call for law enforcement, and you can put in there like circumstances seem, you know, not right, or caller is uncooperative, whatever. Can you go? Now there's protocols in most places where law enforcement's automatically added, obvious things like gunshots, stabbings, overdoses, usually any trauma involving a child, things like that. Where I've worked, it's always been, if you have a weird feeling, send them. Because one, you don't want to put your fire rescue personnel in danger in any way. And you also don't want to let a weird situation go. It's just a thing. If you have a feeling about it, add them.
So instead of trying to get clarification on the second fall situation, you probably would have at that point looped law enforcement in?
If they didn't, yeah, if I couldn't get any good answers, I would have. And if they kept getting more...
Oh, yeah, irritated? Like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, more irritated, I would have, because, you know, I don't know what's going on there. And yes, people do react differently to trauma. Some people are crazy, they're mean. And, you know, once EMS gets there, they totally change. That happens, but you never know. And so I'm just more of a, I would rather be cautious than not.
Were you surprised that there was no, because we had talked to a 911 operator on another episode, and she said one of the questions they always ask is, are there pets or animals? Because EMT's rolling in there. You're in a country setting. Mm-hmm. Do you find that odd that that was not asked?
Yeah, it seemed to me like she sort of jumped from protocol to protocol, and then she didn't finish up what they call pre-arrival instructions. He did tell her that somebody was going to meet the ambulance. That's one of the things you would say. The other thing is, do you have any pets? Can you put them away? Can you secure them? And if she had asked the question, do you know what caused the fall? And they had said, oh, well, she tripped over the dogs. Then, okay, that's an accident, but can you put your dogs away?
Right.
We should also that we don't hear dogs at all. I didn't personally hear
it. No, I didn't hear any dogs.
I think when we were talking earlier, you said it sounded at one point like maybe she was, could have potentially been putting dogs away.
Right. In the very beginning of that call where you hear the dialing into the trunk line for 911, of course, as soon as that trunk line is activated, the recorder starts. So you may not, you don't hear anybody talking to you yet, but it's already recording. So in that interim, there was like, Maggie made a sound like, you know, like maybe she was trying to get, you know, a dog in the house or something. And I think when I initially listened to that episode and heard that, that's kind of what I thought. But I think you had also talked about possibly her tripping over the dog. So that may have been in my mind. So when I listened back to it, I didn't feel like it was enough sound to say, oh yeah, she's shooing a dog in the house.
I want to hear this beginning part here.
That.
That little part where she said, like,
or come here or something. Yeah. That's kind of what it sounded like to me when I first heard it, was she was like, come here.
It could have been a shoe or something like that. Yeah. It's hard to say. But the weird part was that Paul was holding her up. And to me, that was odd because Maggie doesn't say, well, she's up at any point. She doesn't even mention that she's, which would be kind of an important thing. She's standing or she's being held up.
And one of the instructions is actually not to move them.
So if he had picked her up, that is a thing. Right. Don't do that.
Right. So let's not do that. Let's put her back on the ground. Because again, you don't know, especially if you don't know what caused the fall. Maybe she tripped and fell. But if she did hit her head, now maybe she's woozy from hitting her head. She's going to fall again. Or if she did faint and then fell, well, now she might faint again.
Yeah. Head injury. Yeah.
Right.
We should talk about so one of the things that has come about is that she potentially had some health problems that mm-hmm. has caused this fall or may have caused this fall. So the dispatcher does ask her about, you know, whether she'd ever had a stroke before and that sort of thing. So I just kind of wanted to go over that protocol with you.
Yeah, that was kind of off protocol. Now,
oh, really?
Some people, some places, they do ask once they've completed their emergency medical dispatch protocol, they will ask some history questions just because the EMD protocol doesn't really account for that except in a few protocols. Stroke is one of them, and I think also like if there's head pain, a headache or something like that, it'll say, was there any mention of a stroke or anything like that. In the fall protocol and then going to unconscious, I don't know why you would have asked, has she had a stroke before?
Yeah, because that would not necessarily be an indication she's having another stroke. I mean, that's
right. She possibly could have had a stroke and fallen down, but in my mind, you still haven't determined if anybody knew what caused her to fall. So you're not gonna ask another question when you don't know the answer to your primary question.
One of the other things that in recent lawsuit filed by the umbrella policy that Alec had at the time of the accident was that he claims that he got there before AMS and that she regained consciousness and told him that the dogs caused the accident. Do you often see people regain consciousness in this type of situation?
I mean, it can happen, but generally it's going to be somebody who's having a seizure that might come out of it and then go into what they call a postictal state. Now, maybe she was not that unconscious and he got there in time and she was able to answer a question. And then her level of consciousness deteriorated from there. But to kind of wake up and say, oh, yeah, the dogs got in my way and then go unconscious again is
her only sentence. That's right. The only thing. Yeah.
Right. That's a little strange. But again, that's where, you know, it's not the call taker or the dispatcher's responsibility right. to do that interrogation. But at the same time, if you hear weird stuff, it's your responsibility to say, maybe somebody else needs to do the interrogation.
It's different when you're looking at it in retrospect and you're playing, you know, armchair quarterback. Yes. Some things seem strange that might not have seemed strange at the time.
So one thing also is there's been a lot of speculation about who was at the scene. And, you know, we know that there was someone meeting the EMTs at the front of the property to lead them to where she was. Would one question that you would ask people would be, who is there? Would you ask that and want names?
No, probably not. Now, again, if I got a weird feeling, then I probably would. At least I would have said when Paul came on the phone, you know, I would have said, okay, what is your name? So that now I at least know who I'm talking to now.
Do you think there's anything about whether Maggie was on a landline? Because I thought that was a little bit confusing.
It was confusing to me too.
From the way she was acting about not being able to take the phone, I would say a landline. But then of course, most of us have cordless phones if we do still have landlines. And if she's on the front steps of the house, I would assume that it would go that far. Now, one of the other funny things about rural environments is that a cell phone may work in the house, may not work out of the house, may, you know, like that does happen in in my house, if I'm not connected to Wi-Fi, I could go in one bedroom and make a phone call. Anywhere else, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, there could be a dead spot, you know, on their property. Right.
So I don't think that was clear. But again, that's something that I would have definitely gotten clear. And so there was confusion. And then, of course, he comes on the phone. And why was all there? I mean, again, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback anybody because Lord knows we all get, well, most of us get QA'd at work for what we're doing. And sometimes you listen to your own phone calls and you're like, what sure. was I doing? Like, was I having a stroke while I was taking that? But why was there all that debt? Like, I would have been like, hello, where did you go? Are you still there? Did we get disconnected? What?
I thought that was odd too, because there was nothing and no one.
Nothing. And nothing. Then he pops on the line. It's like, wait,
where'd you come from? It?
Right. There were some things that working in a law enforcement environment that I would have been a little more nosy about.
Because you're wired that way after so many calls right. that involve suspicious or possibly suspicious things.
You would not, people do the craziest things. Like, I mean, I have had somebody call and say that their, I can't remember when now, whether it was a current or an ex-husband, he died and my son found him at home and he called me and I came over and he's dead. And now they're trying to drag him out of the back. There's no porch. So she backed the pickup truck to the sliding door and they're trying to drag him out into the bed of this pickup truck on a tarp. And in the meantime, we're having this like crazy round of thunderstorms. Right. Maybe you didn't murder this guy, but it sounds a little weird to me. Like, so you're definitely, and she was calling to get the fire department or EMS to help her. Like she wasn't calling.
She wanted like to help move the body.
Yes, essentially. Yes. That is what she wanted because, and as it turned out, the deputy that responded, there was a friend of mine and it turned out that their driveway had been pretty much washed out in the storm. And she thought the only way to get him to the funeral home was to wrap him in a tarp and put him in the bed of the pickup truck and drive him to the end of the driveway.
Oh, so I'm going to, you know, any shallow graves in the area?
Right. I mean, it was so strange. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, am I crazy? Does anybody? And everybody was like, what? No, she totally killed that guy. You know?
Well, but it's been a pleasure having you join us. And we're going to have to do it again at some point if some more things come out, but it really, really cool to you to take some time and talk with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm definitely enjoying this podcast because I like the way that you guys aren't sensationalizing and you're asking questions and I think doing all the right things. So.
Oh, thank you. And it's very nice.
See ya.
Yeah, bye.
Before we wrap this episode, we've got good news. Seton, introduce us to our guest.
So we're excited to have Suzanne Anders with us. She is the founder of the Standing for Stephen charity. And Suzanne, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, this was started, just by seeing a post on Facebook that Stephen needed a headstone. And I met Miss Sandy for the first time at Stephen's gravesite last September, I guess it was, maybe October. And from there, we started a GoFundMe, which is Standing for Stephen Smith, and had a fundraiser on October 30th.
Yes, and it was so fun. We had the best time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was a great time. I think everyone had a good time. And we've raised money for the Smith family for not only Stephen's headstone, but also his dad, Mr. Joel Smith, who was buried next to Stephen. We've raised enough money for a headstone for him as well.
So I think you had an update about the headstone.
Yes, I reached out. Thanks to our wonderful friend COVID. In the supply chain shortage, there's been a bit of a backlog on the stone, the actual monument getting in. They do have Stephen's stone is in. Great. However, they're having issues finding a part for their laser machine to actually do the etching into the stone. So they're promising that they will do their best to have it out in the next 30 to 60 days.
Ooh, so good news.
We have our fingers and toes crossed. Mr. Joel's stone is not in yet, but they're hoping to have that in the next few months as well.
Fantastic.
That's great news.
Things are moving along.
And why are we talking about it this week?
because Miss Sandy has a big birthday coming up on the 31st. Oh. And I just wanted to give her a shout out. She is one of the most amazing people I've ever met, as a mother, as a woman, as just a Christian, and her faith and strength just is utterly amazing. And just wanted to let her know we are all still here standing for Stephen and loving her and supporting her and holding her up the best way we can.
That's fantastic. I mean, it's a great thing.
And how do we find your charity?
Well, we have a Facebook page. It's Standing for Stephen, hashtag Standing for Stephen. And then there's the GoFundMe. I've still left that open. That is Standing for Stephen Smith. We had to add the Smith on to the end for the GoFundMe page, but it's Standing for Stephen on Facebook and Standing for Stephen Smith on GoFundMe.
It's amazing that you've put this all together and done this, and all the people that have helped and contributed. We thank you as well, but you're the spark behind it. So you should be very proud of what you've accomplished.
Well, it's been an honor for me, and it has been a humbling experience for me as well. And I did not do it alone. So Seton's been a huge help. Matt, you helped us too at the fundraiser with the t-shirt. So I appreciate everything that y'all have done as well for bringing attention to this and keeping Stephen's story out in the light, out in the spotlight.
And I'm always up for a good drag show here and there. Thank you so much.
We appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
No, thank you. And I hope y'all have a great rest of your day. And thanks for having me. And happy birthday, Miss Sandy. We love you.
If you missed all that information, go on over to the Murdoch Podcast Facebook page. That's where we hang out. And murdochpodcast.com. And if you want to go directly to me, mattharrispodcast@gmail.com. And we will talk soon.